Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today has a master's degree in psychology and is a student services administrator at Butte College. Peggy Jennings Severe has written a book to help people create more loving and meaningful relationships. She provides questions and activities to expand and deepen conversation at family gatherings, anniversaries, birthdays, long car rides, and holidays. She wants us to reclaim the art of conversation. Her book title is Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation. Peggy Jennings Severe, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You say you've been writing this book for 40 years. That's a long time to be writing a book. What do you mean by that?
I think I just have been observing conversations or lack of conversations for a very long time. Even as a young child, I remember I grew up in a family of all boys, and I was the youngest. And my mother took it upon herself every year to arrange for my dad and I to go out to lunch. And I remember these occasions vividly because not so much what we said, but what we didn't say. And we would sit, and we were dressed up, and we'd go to a nice restaurant. And I always appreciated the gesture, but I felt so awkward with my father. I didn't have much to say to him, and he didn't have much to say to me. So that's where I began to think about conversations, probably not in a really conscious way, but thinking about the importance of it and wasted opportunities. And then I had a couple other occasions throughout life. One is kind of observing couples at restaurants who seemingly don't have much to say to each other, sometimes even lacking eye contact. And then on the occasion when my husband and I were married with young children and we would go out to dinner, oftentimes we would be at a loss for conversation that didn't begin and end with our children. And so all of those kind of have led up to me trying to create opportunities for myself and my family and my friends, but the communities that I'm a part of to begin to have a conversation that's meaningful.
Well, you know, when you were talking about going to lunch with your dad, I could really see this scene so vividly. I think one thing, too, back in the day, dads were not really as involved with their children as they are now.
Not at all.
And I know with my dad, it was like when I went away to college and he wanted to talk, but the weather was about as far as we could get.
Exactly.
He would ask how the weather was, and then there was just nothing else we had to say. So I can imagine you and your dad sitting across the table from each other, and you said earlier the things not so much said as not said.
Yes, and both of us so wishing
exactly
that we knew what we how to have a conversation with each other.
So you are doing this observing for 40 years. This is kind of percolating in the back of your mind, this kind of problem that maybe there you could provide a solution for.
Correct, and I think also my work has lent to that because I'm in a field where doing icebreakers or team building is natural too, or at least endured on my campus by me. And so I got to practice a lot on my peers and coworkers and certainly on my family.
Well, it isn't the first chapter in your book, but after a while, you tell us how this idea for this particular book and this particular format came to be.
I sure did.
Would you read that chapter in your
first
part of that chapter?
When my husband and I were newly married without children of our own and just beginning our careers, we began to have our two nephews visit us for 10 days each summer. Since both my husband and I worked in the field of education, we had significant time off in the summer, and eventually our home became a summer camp for our niece and four nephews. But these two particular nephews were our first and came most consistently, so the memories with them are a bit stronger. It was with these two that I created my first question game, later named Life Talks, by Patrick, the youngest.
This book is named by one of your nephews.
Absolutely.
He calls it Life Talks.
I should give him great credit for it, and often do. Exactly. He's the one that said, "When are we going to have Life Talks, Auntie Peggy? When are we going to have Life Talks?" So that's where it began.
And you have suggestions, you say, for questions in a long car ride. So during these summers, you would maybe run out of ideas, and so they maybe contributed some questions?
Absolutely. One was more outgoing of the two, and so he always had ideas and would pop up with questions. The other, one time we laughed because he said, Auntie Peggy, I'm only so deep. I'm not as deep as my brother. but both of them would come up with their own questions, and they got meatier as they got older. And I guess that's one of the suggestions I might make early on is to not have too great expectations early when you begin to initiate these kinds of activities, and then let them grow with experience, and they will get richer and more deeper.
Well, after you explain how this came about, you offer some questions, suggestions for long car rides. Mm-hmm. And what are some of those questions?
The very first one we began with, and I remember to this day, was, if you could be any animal, what would you be? And
you know, before
why?
You go, Father, if you could be any animal, I remember years ago, I didn't know how old I was, this question came up just in conversation, and I remember to this day which animal I wanted to be. I don't know that I would still be that animal, but I remember that question very vividly.
And what's interesting, in late May, when I announced to my husband's family that I wrote this book, and I gave them credit, and I read the introduction to this chapter. I said, do you remember what the question was, the very first one I asked in the car? And they both knew it was that question. So I don't know what it is about it.
I'm not the only one who remembers that question.
I think we have a natural affinity to animals or something, but yeah, they remembered.
So that's a good starting question, because that's easy. Most people can think of an animal. If they don't, maybe the other questions are too hard, but they can probably come up with an answer
yes.
to that one. And that eases them into the process.
Especially for young folk.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have something kind of non-threatening and fun.
So what are some other car questions?
If you could have any job in the world, what would it be? If you could have any car, what would it be? If you could go anywhere for vacation, where would you go? What subject do you enjoy learning most and
so
why?
So that sounds like for school kids,
yes.
you'd be asking them what their favorite subjects are,
yes.
for example. And then you ask, if you could meet anyone famous, who would it be and why?
Mm-hmm.
And now, I would imagine that when the boys were little, if this question were asked, who would they know, baseball heroes?
Well, they're definitely athletes. And so I'm sure their answers focused on either someone in that's in the limelight and would be in a movie they saw, or in probably most likely in sports. One thing you mentioned, too, that I want to say is as they got older, and I mentioned earlier that the questions got a little meatier, because one of the questions in here is one that they came up with, which was, if you could change one thing about your family, what would it be?
Ooh, do you want to open up that can of worms?
It was, and it was interesting because we're one step removed from the parents. So they could
be more honest with you.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
So we had a lot of good, and they came
up with that question.
They did. Yeah.
Did they ask you not to tell their parents?
Sometimes. Sometimes. But I think with all of these questions that you want to set up a sense of safety, but also a sense of a positive,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
you want to frame them in the positive. But they often open a conversation to go farther and in directions that you don't even anticipate.
Well, I would imagine that maybe that question helped you when you became a parent.
Absolutely. They were our test, our guinea pigs, in lots of ways. So we got to test our parenting skills on them, those poor boys.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier. She has put together a book called Life Talks, which is a guide to bringing back conversation. And she's just been giving us some ideas of questions you might ask in a long car ride. Now, there's another time when maybe conversation doesn't get very far, and that is at family gatherings. If these are people you don't see very often, you get together for Thanksgiving, and what do you talk about?
Absolutely. And this was born mostly in my family on vacations, because you have a lot of uninterrupted time. And that's why we treasure, I think, vacations so much as a culture, and certainly in our family. And so at a dinner, we would often say, you know, ask the question, what was the highlight of this vacation or holiday for each of us, and start there. But some of the other questions we ask are, what is one of your favorite childhood memories? What's your earliest memory? What family trip or vacation was your favorite and why? In fact, the other night we started asking that question to our adult children now, and we all answer what our favorite our favorite family vacation was, and it was fun to relive them.
Well, that question about what is your earliest memory, I'll bet it's things like Christmas time, or do you remember some of their answers?
You know, sometimes they're just pretty benign. It could be, I shouldn't say benign. My daughter will often say it's my son being born. So that isn't too benign.
Oh, yeah.
And she remembers vividly being at the hospital and being there when to help with his first bath.
But now, I did ask your earliest memory. Mm. So I thought you meant like when you were 2 years old or 3 years old.
And she was three.
And she remembers that.
She remembers her brother being born.
Oh, my. Yeah. And then you ask which family pet was your favorite. I mean, that's an easy one for children to answer.
It is. And it doesn't usually just end with naming the pet. But then we begin to talk about the memories and what was special about them and what characteristics do they have that we appreciated. And like pets, you know, there's some that are more closer to one member of the family than the other, and that kind of emerges too as we talk about it.
Well, the fact that you have that question indicates that you want to include the children.
Absolutely.
Because usually I think the adults are planning things, they're busy, say, getting Thanksgiving dinner on the table, and the children have to just entertain themselves and probably don't get included. Like this question, any age could answer?
You know, I think what's so valuable about seemingly simple questions is it gives our children the practice and the skills and the vocabulary to share their thoughts and their feelings and their memories in a way that's safe and predictable. For instance, if you start doing this at Thanksgiving every year, they'll know and anticipate and think about. And so I just think it just gives them a whole skill set that maybe we don't even think about.
Because there was a time when children were supposed to be seen and not heard. Children's opinions didn't matter. What they thought didn't matter. I think we're learning otherwise.
I do too. And I think, you know, it's interesting when I talk to my close friends, one of the things they appreciate about my parents so much, and one of the things that our children have told my husband Reese and I that they appreciate about us as well, is that we've always asked their opinions and we've always been interested in what they're doing and what they think. They appreciated that and they valued that. And I think these kind of are a way to carry that on.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier, and she has a book, Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation. And one thing that you do at birthday times, when people have a birthday coming up, and most of us would go to the store and buy a Hallmark card, and you don't do that in your family. So instead of a printed birthday card, what do you do?
Well, we call them verbal birthday cards, and essentially we've ruled out birthday cards, printed ones, years ago. And instead, when it's someone's birthday, they get to choose the time and they get to choose who's present. And when it's their time and they're ready, they said, well, I'm ready for the verbal birthday card. And so all of us who are present then go around and not in any particular order, but we say what we appreciate about that person. And oftentimes there's a friend or an extended family member, and if you're present, you have to participate. It's mandatory fun. So they have to be a part of it, and it's something we all really, really look forward to.
Well, I can just imagine that you're going to have some family members that the eye roll, and especially I would think that maybe it divides along gender lines, that women are more willing to participate in this than men, perhaps, or adults more than young people. Do you find that the case?
I do.
When you say, let's all gather around and talk?
In my immediate family, everybody's so used to it that we're pretty comfortable with it. But when you talk about extended family or people who are visiting or friends, there's a lot of factors. One can be age. One can also be if you're kind of an introvert or extrovert. If you're an introvert and you not kind of need to think about your answers and don't really want to be put on the spot, throughout the book I talk about making sure you let those people know in advance what the question's going to be so they can ruminate, they can think about it and not be caught off guard. So I think that's one group that you kind of have to be cautious with. The young, again, need to be prepped a little bit. We had a family reunion this summer, and my great-nephew The question came quickly to him, and he felt on the spot and embarrassed and was kind of irritated by it. And we said, take your time, you know, go do what you need to do, think about your answer, and come back. And he did. He was very proud of his answer when he did come up with it. I also had just recently, when I did a presentation at Butte College, two mothers of young boys, and they both said that when they talked about introducing these kinds of activities to their husband, both husbands were a little reticent. And so what they decided to do was kind of slip questions in when they least expected it. And not make a big deal initially about it, not make it a big event or a big activity, but just start asking those questions at times when there's quiet or you're in the car again or at night, at bedtime.
Well, speaking of your family, too, I understand you consulted them for ideas. For example, it's been a long time probably since you went. Well, no, actually, graduation comes up every year for you at a college. But questions like first date questions or graduation, I would think this your younger members of your family were helpful there.
Yeah, it's interesting. As I wrote this book primarily sitting in a recliner with my laptop on my lap, and questions come pretty easy to me. But after a while, even I started to get fatigued and couldn't think of anything. So oftentimes my adult son, Ben, would be across the way sitting on the couch, and I'd say, Ben, quick, help, give me 15 or five additional questions related to graduation. In fact, the graduation chapter starts with his five or six questions that he gave me, because I thought they were very interesting questions and ones I wouldn't have thought of. So I was very appreciative of that. And then first dates, I absolutely went to him for advice. He's 24, and so still in the dating scene, and I haven't been for some time. So he was a great resource for me to say, okay, let's start with questions that aren't too controversial or too deep, and but interesting, things that will get you some information about the person, but then kind of work up to more questions that really kind of reveal who they are.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier. She's written a book, Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation. And you have conversation starters. You have a chapter where you could probably cut the page out of your book and cut up little pieces of paper that have topics on there. And what do you suggest people do? Make their own cards? I know your daughter has made nice little gift packages.
She has. She's laminated the list of questions, some of the most popular chapters, so that you don't have to take this cumbersome book with you to the restaurant or wherever you're at. But sure, you could put it on slips of paper. When we do our family reunion, I gave everyone in the morning a slip of paper that they picked from a bag, and told them by this evening around the campfire, everybody had to answer their questions, and they had time to think about it or trade it. But you can, you know, cut them up, make copies, and or just take the list in advance or email it to your spouse and say, we're going to be answering these at our next anniversary dinner or however you'd like to.
Well, speaking of get-togethers, there is a group that gets together once a year, and they don't mind at all going through your questions. They are eager. And these are some older ladies that you have a tea party for.
We do. I just feel so fortunate that these women are still around and vibrant and want to participate in the Christmas tea that my daughter and I host every year. They were friends of my parents, and my parents have been gone for some time, so it's my connection still to that generation. And they come every year, early December, and we have a formal Christmas tea, and they are all in their late 80s, early 90s, and we start the event with mimosas, and we answer the question, what's the most significant thing that's happened to you in the last year? And then we have our tea and the scones and the dipped strawberries and all that go with a high tea. And then at the end, when we're sitting around, we ask a question that is kind of cross-generational so that we get a feeling for how different each of us have experienced a particular topic.
And these ladies that get to tea, and you say they're in their 80s and 90s, but this is something they look forward to. They like to talk about questions that probably don't come up?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they always kind of, before we get to them, will say, what's our question for this year? What's our question? Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite that we answered a couple years ago, it was just fascinating, is how did you five grow up, five women, to be such independent women during an era that didn't encourage that? And to hear their life stories. And again, the people there were cross-generational, cross-section. I had friends, so they were my age, but also my daughter and my goddaughter, who started this when she was about 13. So each of us got to answer that question, but in particular, that one was fun to listen to their answers.
I'll bet it was. And when you are speaking of listening to the older generation, you have a chapter that is so touching, I think, and that is that the older members of our family, that we don't think to ask them questions. I wish, there's so many questions I would love to have asked my grandparents, even my parents, that never seem to get around to doing that. And you give us a way of, and you videotaped, actually, your parents.
I did.
And you have a video of asking your dad questions. And was this the start of the chapter on talking to elders?
It was. And I did this in 1991. And I just had the good foresight to do it. And I sat my parents down in our den and videotaped both of them and asked them to kind of start from the beginning and go to the end with highlights from their life. And so when I created this chapter, I went back and listened to both of their interviews and took a lot of questions.
Because at that time, it was just kind of open-ended. You said, just tell me. And you didn't have specific questions.
I didn't, although one of the things I knew even then instinctively was to really ask for detail. So detail not about dates and about addresses, if they could remember, and about how big was the city of Seattle when you lived there, and how big was your high school, and do you remember the address and what specific clubs were you involved in? So I kept asking and prompting them for detail. And that's what makes it so rich. And I want to say, too, is that I think oftentimes people will say, gosh, it feels intrusive, or somehow I'm implying they're ready to pass and I don't want to do it too soon. But I don't think you can. And also, I want to reassure you that when you're watching it, at least for me, it has never been a sad occasion to watch the tapes. And they both have been gone for 10 and 12 years. So what it is just such a wonderful reminder of their mannerisms and their speech and the humor that went back and forth between me and them. And it's just a lovely gift, and it's a gift for future generations, because one of the questions, for instance, not only is it the detail is important to capture, but my last question for both of them is, what advice would you give future generations? So it's their legacy, too, as they get to pass that on.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier, and she has a guide to bringing back conversation. Her book is called Life Talks, but she also has the suggestion for people with video equipment, for example, even just recording equipment, or if you don't have the technology, just to sit down and ask these questions that you have in your book as a starting point. Like you
Absolutely.
Say, once they start talking, you can come up with other questions, follow-up questions to get more detail.
Exactly.
But, you know, when after my dad died, for years he had kept a scrapbook, and I had known it existed, but I didn't really pay much attention to it. And the Historical Society asked me to do a write-up about him. And I went through that scrapbook thinking, oh, if I had only asked him questions even when I was living, because once I went off to college, I really wasn't there except on special Christmas, Thanksgiving, that sort of thing. And I so wished that I had sat down and listened to him tell the importance of these things, how these things were important in his life.
Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but when you finally lose both of your parents, you have a disconnect from the history. And oftentimes, I still to this day will go, oh, I want to ask, or oh, I wish I knew. And you don't have that. So at least this way you captured it. And even having captured it, I forgot a lot of the detail until I went back and looked at it again. So, yeah.
Well, how do you suggest that somebody broach this subject without feeling like you are saying like they're going to pass within a short time, but that you really just want to know? What are some of the suggestions you have to get this conversation started?
You know, I think if at all, if you're stuck at all, is let them know that this is a legacy for their family to come and for the grandkids and the kids that follow.
I think you said the magic word there, grandkids.
Yes.
What grandparent won't do anything for the grandkids?
Yes, correct. And so I would let them know that, and then I'd also give them a list well in advance. My dad took notes before he sat down, and I didn't even give him a list. But I think that will make it much more meaningful and useful period of time. The other thing I recommend when you're doing it is to let them know the time period that they have, if it's a half hour or 45 minutes, and to give them kind of prompts periodically, like we have 20 minutes left, mm-hmm. just so that they'll really isolate on what's most important.
So what your dad did ahead of time is he wrote down what was important to him and what he wanted to be sure he included
this
conversation. Now, one thing in your book is that you suggest that other people not be in the room, because I can imagine that if you've got spectators there, an audience, that they might be a little inhibited with their answers and they might be much more relaxed and more comfortable talking to you.
Yes, for instance, my dad was married before my mom. And so I really wanted to ask some questions about that marriage because I didn't have a lot of details. And so having her there, I was, in hindsight, would have not done that, because I think we tend to edit what we say based on who's there, and to be a little more guarded maybe. And so, but other than that one occasion, I didn't feel like in any way it took away from the experience. But I think in general, I would definitely recommend doing it separately.
Now, did your mother also, did you have her do her own interview?
I did. I then interviewed my mom, and again, it's fun to see the difference in style. My dad was very kind of analytical and went in chronological order, and my mother was more of a storyteller that kind of weaved her life through stories and her relationships.
Well, you have a section on anniversaries. What questions how do you propose to get people to talk on their anniversary?
You know, I think this is one of my favorite use of questions. And again, this was born out of my husband and I going to dinner on our anniversary and wanting to make it fun and special and unique. And yet we kind of always turn to the kids for subject matter. And so one night we were sitting there, I said, you know, I'm going to ask a question. Let's take turns answering it. And then you ask a question and we'll both answer it. And it was kind of born from there. And so some of the questions that we ask are, in the last year, what was the low point and high point for you? And we always start with this one, just kind of as a summary, a way to kind of look back and in retrospect for the year. Also, in the last year, what thoughtful, kind, or meaningful thing did I do for you unexpectedly that you really appreciated? That was my husband's question. And my favorite is, after X amount of years, what still surprises you about me?
Those are wonderful questions, and I think people should, at home, I can just imagine they would be taking out a pencil and writing these down. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, Peggy.
Oh, it's been a joy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Her book is Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation. The author is Peggy Jennings Sevier. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.